We'll make a start. To anyone who doesn't know Mark, which I think Mark knows most of us, Mark is Minister of Hanley Chapel. And we have given you a very specific question tonight,
indeed.
Mark. Did Jesus really rise from the dead? I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you. I think it's a great question to be asked. I think it wouldn't be exaggerating to say that this is the most massively important question to do with the Christian faith. Because if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, the whole lot is nonsense. There's actually a verse in the Bible that says, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, so we've only got hope for as long as this life lasts, and then your hope dies because there's not really a risen Jesus, it's not really eternal life or anything like that, then Christians are, of all people, the most miserable, the most to be pitied. So if you think of all the various Christian teachings that there are, Christian ethics, Christian morality, how Christians are meant to live, Christian doctrine, what we believe about God and the afterlife and everything to do with meaning and purpose. If you think of that as being a great, beautiful building, then the foundation it all rests on is this claim that a real man called Jesus of Nazareth used to be dead and isn't anymore, that he quite literally and physically rose up from the grave. And if that's not true, if it's just a myth, a legend, a mistake, then really the foundation crumbles, and that means the whole structure collapses. Christianity is a bit of a meaningless waste of time if in real space-time history there wasn't this utterly extraordinary event. So it's not just like, oh, it's one belief Christians have alongside loads of others, and if you remove the resurrection, Christianity would still stand, it would still be valid, it would still be a meaningful way of life to pursue. I would argue, based on what the Bible teaches, that if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then we should all just forget Christianity. It's a waste of time, it's in vain, is the phrase the Bible uses. So it's a big issue, did it actually happen? It is right at the heart of the Christian message. Although it's important what Jesus taught and the morality that he preached and all those kinds of things, the real heart of the Christian message is this claim that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died on a cross, and that that's how our sin and our guilt is taken away, and that he came back literally from the dead, and that's why we can have a hope of life beyond death as well. So we're really dealing with the very heart of the Christian faith tonight. And I want to share three reasons why I'm absolutely convinced it really happened. And I acknowledge that it is a scientific impossibility. Sometimes people will say the resurrection can't have happened because it's impossible for people to come back from dead. My response would be, that's the whole point. The whole claim is that something that can't happen in the ordinary natural course of things happened. And so the only explanation is that it was a supernatural event, that there is a God who's above nature, even above the normal way of life and death, and he uniquely has the ability to reverse death. So starting from the idea that a resurrection can't happen because resurrections don't happen is kind of missing the point. The whole message is that something unique and one-off and unprecedented is claimed to have taken place all those years ago. So here's the first reason I am convinced Jesus literally rose from the dead all those centuries back, and it's the eyewitness accounts that have come down to us. So whereas with some other belief systems and religions and philosophies, the history behind it doesn't actually matter that much. So if you think about Buddhism, for example, you could still hold certain Buddhist ideas and beliefs to be true and valid, even if you remove the Buddha, you know, a historical teacher, a person who said he found enlightenment. In one sense, the details of his life don't necessarily affect the belief system, the structure. But with Christianity, if you remove the historical person Jesus and the idea of him having died on a cross and risen again, then all his teachings, all the claims that he made, all the preaching that he gave, it really doesn't make sense. So more so than with lots of other philosophies, what happened in the past matters massively for Christianity. And what we have are various documents that are purporting to be eyewitness testimony, people who were actually there, who encountered Jesus firsthand when he was alive, and he was then publicly executed, and these people are claiming that they saw him again after he had been killed. And it was very obvious that he was a corpse, because not only was he crucified, but a Roman soldier thrust a spear into his side and blood and water came out. And the Romans didn't bother to do what they normally did. They usually broke the legs of people they crucified so that they couldn't carry on breathing, so that death was inevitable. They didn't bother doing that with Jesus because he was already confirmed to be dead. So he was a dead man, and it wasn't done in a secret, in a corner somewhere. It was done in a very public place just outside Jerusalem. And then there were these people who make this assertion that they not only saw Jesus again in a kind of vision or apparition, but their claim is that they had conversations with him, they spent time with him, they even saw him eat food in their presence and the food was gone, they touched his body, they handled him, they had these extended interactions with him in different places at different times, and they became absolutely convinced, even though their world had fallen apart when Jesus died, and they weren't expecting him to come back at all, they became absolutely persuaded that this man was alive again. And some of them wrote down their testimony. And I think it's helpful to recognize the Bible is not a single unit. It's not as though in history there was a group of men around a table, some kind of council or committee, and they organized the writing of the Bible. Let's make a holy book. And I know some people have the kind of conspiracy theory that they got this book with these claims and it was an aim to gain power and control over people and that kind of thing. But really the Bible is a collection of separate documents written at different times by different people in different places. And only later they all got collated into this one handy volume that we can so readily access today, the Bible. But these are different people who are saying, I encountered Jesus of Nazareth alive and well after he'd been killed. And I'd say the four most important ones are Matthew, who was one of Jesus' followers, and he was a tax collector, and he has what is the first book in our New Testaments today, the Gospel of Matthew. And his claim is that he saw Jesus alive again after he had died. John is another really important one. He wrote a gospel account. He also wrote some other parts of the New Testament. And similarly, he says that he is a witness to these things. And the reason he wrote his part of the Bible was to convince people who don't believe that these things really did happen, that Jesus has to be the Son of God because especially of the resurrection. And then there's Paul, a very important figure because he was not only a skeptic, he was an opponent of the Christian faith. He was dead set against this idea that Jesus of Nazareth was the Messiah, that he'd risen from the dead. He was actually spending his time going around full of hate, rounding up Christians, getting them thrown in prison, gleeful if there was an opportunity for one of them to be killed. There was an early Christian called Stephen, and he was stoned to death, and Paul was elated that they got rid of him. And yet, somehow or other, he turned into the foremost preacher of the Christian faith. And he travelled more extensively than any of the original disciples of Jesus, spreading the message. And the thrust of his message wasn't just, here's some really great morals, here's some good ethical ideas. The message was, Jesus of Nazareth has risen from the dead. So something convinced him, and we can read his own writings, 13 of them, in fact, 13 letters from Paul, And in one of them he says, he appeared also to me. And he adds, he appeared to more than 500 people at once. And he says in that historical letter, and most of them are still alive. So just think about this. You've got these different men writing accounts of what they've seen. And they name individuals. They name drop someone called Mary Magdalene and Christ appeared to her. And they mention other people. They mention specific places, specific times, detailed step-by-step accounts. It's not just a vague assertion, but they're saying this happened and this happened and then this happened and these people saw him as well. And when those documents were first written and being circulated, most of the named people were still alive. So you could actually, if you were really invested, you could travel and check out these people and check out their stories. It's one thing to make a claim. It's another thing to actually detail people and places who are still around. And I can't understand how those documents could have gained any circulation and widespread belief and been carefully copied and preserved down through the years if actually they could have easily been rubbished. These people are just making things up. So you've got Paul, you've got Matthew, you've got John, you've got Peter, perhaps one of the best known disciples of Jesus. He wrote a couple of letters in the New Testament. In one of them he says that he has a living hope and it's through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Most people think he was also the chief source for Mark's gospel. So we've got the four accounts of the life, death and resurrection of Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. Luke wasn't a personal eyewitness, but what he did, or what he claims to have done in his gospel, is to have gathered together all the other accounts. So you've got John's account, Matthew's account, Paul's accounts, Peter's account, and then Luke, he presumably interviewed lots of people, and all the stories and all the testimonies, he got them together and he presented a kind of collected edition, a logical, orderly account of all the things that had been reported from a variety of people. So although he's not an eyewitness, he's more of a researcher dealing with multiple eyewitnesses rather than just one man's account, which is kind of what John's gospel is like. So you've got these documents, and I think the key question is, do they stack up? Are they credible? Are they just some kind of metaphorical myth, spiritual language, or a fabrication that people have invented? And I'm convinced, as Jim said, I'm a pastor of a church, so a huge amount of my time is spent in studying the biblical documents, paying a lot of attention to them. And the more I study them, the more compelling I find them. Not only the content, how they all hang together, but the sheer power in them. So I'm convinced that God himself invested power in those writings. And there's this potency to them. And so my challenge to someone who's not sure about the Christian faith or not sure about Jesus coming back from the dead, I'd want to direct them to what claim to be the first-hand eyewitness accounts. Read them open-mindedly, and I think it all hangs together. These are really compelling documents, and they're united in this bold claim that something impossible happened. And the people who made those claims were so committed to it, they thought it was of such monumental significance that they devoted the rest of their lives risking their reputation, their social standing, their finances, even their lives, because most of them ended up being killed by people. And yet they were so persuaded, not only that it happened, but that it had significance for the world as a whole, that they risked everything, in some cases lost everything, for the sake of spreading this message. So there's these eyewitness documents that I believe stand up under scrutiny, and I don't think I've ever heard a credible alternative explanation for the events that are described there. Two other things, not in as much detail as that. So eyewitness accounts. which we find in the Bible. But then secondly, the explosive growth of the church. So when you take a step back and think about what happened, it's pretty astonishing. So these people, they go about telling people about someone that they've, the people they're talking to, they've never met him. They weren't there in Jerusalem and the other places where Jesus actually performed the miracles, gave the sermons, got crucified. And they're from all different cultures, all different religious backgrounds, all different social classes, all different parts of the Roman Empire, into the continent of Europe and various places. And everywhere this message goes, somehow people, they take notes. The witnesses seem so credible. And they're so convinced that what they hear is true that they leave behind their religious background, the faith that they've been immersed in, paganism or whatever it might be, and they devote the entire rest of their lives to following someone they've never met but have become convinced is not only real but did something that no one else has ever achieved, actually came back from the dead, at the risk of persecution and being ostracized by their families and by their communities. And in many cases, like the original disciples, lots of them get killed for their faith. And you have to ask yourself, how did that happen? Now, I realize someone could say, well, other religions have spread far and wide. But here's the difference. Those faiths and religions don't depend, they don't hang upon an historical event or an event that's claimed to have happened in the past. So you can have the beliefs, the morals, the practices, the ceremonies, the rituals or whatever of other systems, and in one sense what happened in the past doesn't make or break it. But with Christianity, the whole core of the message is that Jesus is the Son of God who died on a cross and rose again, and all the other things are, they spring from that foundation. And so I don't believe there's any plausible explanation for how suddenly this Christian faith took the whole world by storm, and for centuries ever since, here we are today. I've never met Jesus, never seen him face to face. I don't believe anyone in the world currently has ever met Jesus, seen him physically. And yet, there are still people from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of cultures, not so much in our own country here, but in other parts of the world, thousands of people are still being added to Christ's church, are still becoming followers of Jesus. There seems to be some inherent power in this message. And if actually Jesus himself is long since dead and buried, I can't make sense of that. How did a message about a man rising from the dead gain so much traction and weight if it was all just either a fabrication, a deliberate lie, or actually based on people who just imagined or dreamt things up? So the wildfire spread of the Christian faith in a really unlikely context to accept it. You know, you've got most people believing in multiple gods and ideas that are completely contrary to the core claims of Christianity. It's not a naturally receptive, fertile ground for the Christian faith to grow in, and yet it spreads. And then the third reason why I think the resurrection is completely plausible and credible is the experience of individuals. Thousands and thousands and millions of people whose lives have been incredibly transformed by believing this message. And I would include myself as one of them. So here is a message, this message about the Son of God entering our world, dying on a cross to save us from sin and God's judgment by taking the punishment himself out of love, and then rising from the dead to defeat the grave for us so that we wouldn't have to all end up dead and under God's judgment. And this message, it has shown itself time and time again to have the power to turn drunkards into sober people and liars into honest people, and serial adulterers into faithful people, and hateful, violent people into peacemakers, and people who are natural enemies, whether that's racially or religiously or culturally, to look start looking upon each other as brothers in the same family. And again throughout the centuries, and it's continuing to happen in the world today, when people come into contact with this message about Jesus, it has this power to change. So in my own experience, I cannot explain my life credibly if there is no such person as Jesus Christ, or if there was a real Jesus Christ, if he actually died centuries before I ever started to exist, because he has exerted such an influence on my life. I've been following him for 24 years and 8 days. And the person I have been since, experiencing, not just reading about him in a book, but experiencing a heart change that has lasted, the person I was and the person I am, I can't explain that through just psychology or anything like that. To go from someone full of bitterness and anger against God, I did believe there was a God, although I certainly wasn't following Jesus Christ, full of self-loathing, and then through Jesus Christ to find a sense of forgiveness and certainty about the future, to be turned into someone who, instead of being completely and utterly self-centered, begins caring about other people. The reason I've devoted my life up until this point to talking about Jesus Christ, wanting to persuade other people to believe in him, is because I'm absolutely convinced it's true, and that it matters, and that it produces an unrivaled positive effect when you really experience Jesus Christ in a personal way. And even more importantly, if he rose from the dead, this is why it all matters. If there really is someone from the past who used to be dead and came back out the other side and showed himself alive to other people, then that means there's hope of life after death for me. I'm relatively young, but I know, like everyone else, I'm going to have to end up in the grave one day. But if there's someone who used to be down in the grave himself and isn't anymore, and has never died since, and is still alive today, and I've known his transforming power in my life, and I've experienced, I'm not claiming I've ever seen him face to face, but I've experienced his peace, his presence, his comfort, his joy, his stabilizing influence. But to know also that when I leave this world, because he came alive again, I can anticipate life that will last forever as well. That's so massive that I cannot keep that to myself. And so Christians, we have this compulsion to want others to discover what we have discovered. That for us, Jesus is not just a person we read about in a book. Now, I do believe in a literal way he came back from the dead, but I've also known something happen in my life that cannot be put down to anything ordinary and natural. So it's a big question, and we're going to talk about it in a moment together, hopefully have some discussion. But the reason it really matters is because if Jesus did rise from the dead, it means there's a way out of death for us, the ultimate problem facing us as human beings. It means he must be who he said he is, claims to be the Son of God. He actually said he's going to rise from the dead. He dies, and then, according to all these witnesses, there he is alive again, backs up all his teaching. And it also means that everything that's wrong in our hearts and our lives can be forgiven. Because why did he need to come back from the dead in the first place? Because he was dead. Why was he dead if he's the Son of God? Well, that's right at the heart of the Bible's message, that the whole point of God sending his Son into the world was intentionally to go through the experience of death, because in his death, he took on himself the wrong, the sin, the guilt of humanity, so that anyone who believes in Jesus could have that sin forgiven. So there's one verse, this is the last thing I say, one verse in the Bible which puts it like this. It says, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, so you acknowledge that he is the Son of God, who's Lord and ruler and master of everything, and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, then you will be saved. That's why it matters so much, because the Bible's promise is that you will be saved from your guilt, from death, from judgment after death, through believing in this incredible, extraordinary person who died and rose again. And so that's why what we're talking about tonight is really of monumental significance. But I realise I've said a lot, so I think it'd be good to open it up for wider discussion now. And I've got a few possible questions in mind that